HeritageRadioNetwork.com, and we are Burning Down the House, here the 10th of November, 2010. Welcome, I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. We are brought to you by Acme Smoked Fish. Sorry, I forgot to get the copy. For over 50 years, Acme Smoked Fish in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, has been the premier provider of North Atlantic smoked seafood, sable, whiting. You can learn more about Acme Smoked Fish at acmesmokedfish.com. Thank you very much. Thank you for sponsoring our program this evening. Well, the green world has been all a buzz. Longtime listeners of Burning Down the House will remember that our good friend Henry Gifford came and spoke with us about his discontents with the United States Green Building Council, and especially with the LEED system, L-E-E-D, which Henry contended when we last spoke with him, does not turn in or be necessarily a predictor of energy-saving buildings. Now, those of us who work with the LEED rating system, which is a checklist for those of you who are civilians, it's quite a lengthy checklist addressing not only energy-conserving and water-conserving, resource-conserving measures that might be instituted in a building design, but also air quality issues, sustainable product development, good stewardship of hardwoods, for example. So it's a multiphasic approach to so-called green building. So it's not as the Cascadia building challenge that we talked about also recently is focused on energy and resource conservation. The LEED is all-encompassing. Now, what's really interesting is that there's been sort of a old-fashioned cattlemen versus ranchers kind of war going on between the USGBC and Henry Gifford. Henry's raised the bar, filed in the U.S. District Court, the Southern Court of New York, on the 8th of October. Henry Gifford, Gifford Fuel Savings, Inc., individually and on behalf of others similarly situated plaintiffs, versus U.S. Green Building, David Gottfried, Richard Federici, Rob Watson, Jane Doe, John Doe, et al., defendants. A class action suit alleging fraud, wire fraud, RICO, that's racket influence corrupt organization activities, and it's really kind of stunning. Let's take the first very short musical break and we'll come back and talk a little more. Prokofiev, Prokofiev's Scherzo from Love of Three Oranges, one of my favorite modern operas. It's always a nice little break piece of music. Do we have Ryan Enchetti on the line? Did you get him? No, well, we'll call him. Now, Henry Gifford did get into some real detail last time he was here on Burning Down the House. Since he is a litigant, I did not want to have him on. I think that would mess up his case. It would be... thank you, Dan. Our pizza margarita from Roberta's, our host, has just arrived. Yum. Yum. In studio, as our guest interlocutor, Sandra Green Lakovic, representing Vox Populi. Hello. You could speak into that microphone. You could say hello to everybody.
Hello.
Very good.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm so glad that you're here.
And we have Ryan on the line as well.
Hey, good. Ryan, are you there?
I am.
Hey, that's good. So, as you know, Henry Gifford was on the program about a year ago talking about his discontents with the USGBC and the lead system. Kind of stunning, this lawsuit, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I suppose you could say that.
I mean, you're a lead AP, right?
I am a lead AP.
And you're an architect.
And an architect.
I'm not sure that you've heard what Henry has to say about his discontents. So if you can stay on the line, Nat, if you could run the next clip, Henry speaking in his own words.
And you're looking at the data. You've come to discover that LEED certified buildings may not be so great at saving energy. Let's talk about that.
Well, for the whole history of the system, they claimed that LEED rated buildings saved energy. They had percentages, they claimed, for many years before anybody actually looked. And after about 10 years of the system getting extremely popular, getting required by law in many parts of the U.S., finally somebody started counting. And that in itself is a scandal that there's only ever been one study. And the
now, was that your study?
No. The U.S. Green Building Council commissioned this study. They hired the New Buildings Institute of Vancouver, Washington. They paid with our tax money, but they hired them to do a study. And the study concluded that LEED buildings save on average 25% to 30%. Now,
that's a huge amount.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. But I did something outrageous. I read the study cover to cover, and I noticed there was nothing in the study that supported the conclusion. There was nothing in the study that even made reference to the conclusion. It was basically just invented and stapled on the cover. They made it all up.
And you went to some lengths to demonstrate how it was, you believe, was fabricated.
Well, they did some statistical analysis. They compared the energy use of the group of LEED buildings for which people were willing to reveal their fuel use, which is, of course, another problem. It was voluntary reporting, presumably skewed toward the better buildings. But they compared the energy use of the LEED-rated buildings to a national database, the federal database called CBEX.
Which is maintained by the Department of Energy?
Yes, many thousands of buildings reporting in, and Commercial Building Energy Consumption Survey, the CBEX data. But they compared the median energy use of the LEED buildings to the mean value. The CBEX is a mean value, so the median is the value where half the values are higher in the data set and half are lower. So if there were 101 data points, the 51st smallest data point, 51st largest would be the same. So until the
which is different from an average, which adds in the highs and the lows and then cuts it by the representative number of reports, which if you have some very high energy consumption on the high end or very low on the low end, it's going to skew the results in a way that the mean would not. Is that right?
That's correct. And since there are no buildings which use a negative amount of energy unless you buy $1 million worth of solar panels, the median would generally be smaller than the mean. So comparing the median of their buildings to the mean of another data set skewed it and made it look really good. And until the time when this study came out, Google, the Wikipedia entry for median used to say that median is often compared to mean as a way of fooling people, used for trickery. That part of the Wikipedia entry went away about the time this study came out.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
With that information, then, you published an article that the USGBC really didn't like very much. Isn't that so?
Yes. The study came out in 07. The results of the study were announced in November at the U.S. Green Building Council's annual conference. And there was a preliminary study, then the final study, and I read them both, and I saw what a scam the article was, and they compared new buildings to old buildings, and for most of the analysis, they simply eliminated the worst performing bunch of buildings. They just took them out of the data set, and they said, well, those are high energy use buildings, so we took them out.
And nobody, we didn't like the data, so we just scratched it.
Yeah, it's like the tobacco
company. So you wrote an article, and where did that appear?
Well, first I was turned down by a long list of very honorable publications, and many people promised to get back to me, and et cetera, et cetera. So I made a website. I had never had a website before, and I put this article on my website. And the purpose of the website was to show, who is this guy who wrote this article? Where is it coming from? And the article explains that the LEED system is a scam, and it creates the image of energy-efficient buildings without actually making energy-efficient buildings. It doesn't demand a measurement. It just demands a prediction. In other words, a promise that the building is energy-efficient.
Yeah.
You can build a really bad building and promise it's good, and you get your seal of approval. So I put this article on my website, and it's become the best-known secret in the industry. Everybody knows about it. Nobody likes to talk too much about it. It's received some coverage in the trade press, but not too much.
And I think some mentions in the New York Times, perhaps?
Starting some weeks ago, it made the Times, now the New York Post, and now other media's picked up on it. And
well, let's stop right there.
So, Ryan, are you still there?
Yeah.
Still with us?
Yes, of course.
Is the LEED system a scam, in your opinion?
I am far from able to answer that question. I mean, I am interested in changing the way we make our buildings, and I'm sure you probably are sympathetic to that.
Oh, absolutely.
And how we do that, well, I mean, LEED and the other rating systems are rating systems. I mean, I'm interested in the thing itself, and you know, whether or not LEED is a scam is not something that I'm really qualified to answer, I think.
Well, you know, I mean, Henry's point that one study took brand new buildings, to what extent data were thrown out simply because whoever was doing the study didn't like the data is something that, of course, will be dealt with during discovery, during this legal process. So we'll eventually, I think there's a good possibility that we will find out what really happened, what data was really excluded. But to take a set of data that address new buildings and compare them to a database of all buildings of, you know, that are 80 years in span, that's not science. That's bogus. I mean, I'm no statistician. But we, as architects, we are trained in mathematics. That it's something that we are able to have an educated opinion about. Sandro had something to say during the break. Go ahead. It was like a. Just speak up.
I thought it was like a bad high school project. comparing the mean and the median.
Yeah, I mean that's just that's scandalous. I mean that's crazy. I mean this is going to shake up the USGBC, don't you think?
Sure, I have no idea, but it seems like it has already had some effect. I have not followed along too closely, but I think that Henry has certainly made an impact already, and potentially even more so.
Yeah, well, the last impact that he had after some of his publications was were revisions to the LEAD system. Introduction of the possibility that LEED certification could be rescinded if post-construction the building in question was found to be lacking, which is a good idea. There were also letters sent to every state chairman of the local chapters refuting Henry's claims. So he's got their number, but exactly why he felt compelled to bring a class action lawsuit, I do not know. I can only surmise that his goal is to force the discovery process and to compel the Green Building Council to have to give out data so that we actually can learn something about what the real intended or unintended, but the real effects of applying the LEED system to buildings actually have been, which would be a good thing considering that some municipalities have required that their own new construction be LEED certified. So
I definitely agree that performance tracking of buildings would be a great idea, and is something that I would wholeheartedly urge people to do. I mean, it's the proof is in the pudding, and I think it'd be hard to make an argument against that.
Yeah, and the cost of monitoring equipment, it keeps coming down all the time to where it's really not a great.
Well, you could just use your bills.
Well, that's true.
Bill.
Sure, that's true too.
I mean, it's probably more complicated depending on what the building is, but it would be pretty simple for single-family homes.
Right. Now, in your own work, do you integrate real-time controls, so like photo sensors that will dim the lights when there's more sunlight? Do you get into things like that?
I have not had a chance to, but I would certainly would like to. I mean, there's all sorts of variety of means of tracking, and there's on the one hand there's going back and validating what you did with tracking building performance that of things you've implemented. On the other hand, I mean, things like photo sensors are building controls that have an impact on the energy use of a building.
Right.
And the things that are most appealing to me are the simplest and that require the fewest controls. But for example, in office design and even, like the corridors of the multifamily apartment building that I live in, you could very productively have some very simple sensors and controls that would
sure.
be very productive.
Oh, absolutely. And I just recently saw an ad for a Lutron sensor that can be wired in after the fact to a light switch. Has a lithium battery. It communicates wirelessly with the sensor to turn the lights on and off. So no hard wiring. Brilliant, brilliant thing.
I would also, just to go back to Henry Gifford, it's fairly clear to me as I go along that the overarching concern when we're talking about sustainability is operating energy used, and that when you look at the life cycle of a building over, you know, 50 years even, which is relatively short,
right.
You plot out the energy that goes into, cumulatively, into operating the building against the energy that goes into building it and maintaining it, and the building and maintaining pieces are quite modest. And so I think, again, Henry is very much, I think it's hard to argue, and I think it's against the what I understand. I mean, I don't know Henry, I'm only able to interpret where he's coming from, but my interpretation is that he's interested in reducing operating energy used, and I would very much agree that that is our primary goal when it comes to quote unquote sustainability.
Well, sure. I mean, if we build well, we could be building structures that'll be here for 500 years. If we build really well, they'd be around for 500 years, requiring very little maintenance. And so to the extent that they use less energy, that's a really good thing. When we come back from the break, I hope Matt Arnold, my friend in Vienna, Virginia, Matt, I hope you're listening. I know that you were going to call in. We're going to take a little musical break appropriate to my feelings about the USGBC. Welcome back to Burning Down the House. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. We're brought to you by Acme Smoked Fish of Greenpoint, Brooklyn. For over 50 years, Acme has been the premier provider of smoked North Atlantic seafood, whiting, sable, kippers. Learn more about Acme Smoked Fish at acmesmokedfish.com. Thank you very much. We're talking about the squirrely world of green building. One of the things that Henry cites in his lawsuit is the monopolistic, almost hegemony
which is underpinned by these ads that say that LEED buildings are more efficient, which has created a condition where people like you, Ryan, you're an architect. I mean, architects should be the highest possible, truly professional status in the construction industry.
Oh, really?
But then I hear, absolutely. But then
wow.
I meet people and I say, well, I'm an architect, and they say, well, are you LEED AP? And I say, no, I'm an architect. You could be a high school dropout and be a so-called accredited professional. There's nothing professional about taking a test and becoming a LEED AP, in my opinion.
But Curtis, we architects have really dropped the ball in recent decades with energy, have we not?
Oh, you mean like California's case study houses that had no insulation? Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, how many? In many, many ways. I mean, how many gigantic west-facing walls of glass that absorb just obscene amounts of energy in the summertime and force the air conditioners on the roof to run triple time.
Yeah, true.
How many architects care about the? How many architects? How to put this? think of the architects that you know and imagine how many of them would make a stink over the quality of the installation of the insulation, and how many of them would make a stink over the finish of the countertops?
Yeah, well,
how many of them even spend a lot of time on the insulation specification and its choice?
Interesting that you should mention that. I'm right now this afternoon. I've been detailing a sunroom addition for just an ordinary house in Darien, Connecticut, and I spent all my time trying to clearly identify where the vapor barrier goes, where the flashing goes, how the insulation works, that there are no thermal bridges, and I don't care a fig what color stone they choose for their countertop, really. You know?
Did you identify where your air infiltration barrier is?
Yes. On the warm side of the insulation.
You're not confusing air infiltration with vapor, are you?
I'm using a material that does both.
I'm putting you on the spot.
This is almost like religion. Ryan, you know, it goes back and forth, here, there, separate barriers, vapor, air. I'm specifying Tyvek Thermowrap, which is really robust shit, in my opinion.
And are you taping the joints?
Of course.
Excellent.
It's in the standard spec, you have to. And also because aesthetically they wanted to see exposed rafters. The roof structure above the rafters is a stressed skin assembly. Two layers of 3/4 CDX, 6 inches of XPS, extruded polystyrene insulation, another piece of 3/4 CDX, 8-inch screws, 2 feet on center in all directions, and then we put a roof on it. Kind of cool, kind of fun.
I'm only trying to make the point that we architects have our share of the blame. I would offer up.
Well, yes.
Not obviously not you, but.
Well, we've talked about that frequently, and you know the lawsuit averse environment of the late 1970s led the American Institute of Architects to try to shield us from liability by encouraging us to not take responsibility. And I think the only way for us to resuscitate our profession is to take responsibility for everything.
wade right in.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
But maybe if we had better data. I mean, because, look, one of Henry's gripes with the USGBC is that they've got the data, but they won't give it up. They won't share it. They won't publish it. When building owners agree to provide performance data to the USGBC, the USGBC, at their own behest, inform the owners that no one will ever see this data. Well, why would that be a big deal? Why would that be a problem? Why is that something that needs to be hidden from view? I mean, that's a very good question, I think. And I don't know. I would hope, I would anticipate that things will change, and perhaps there are other rating systems that are better. I mean, you know about the Cascadia Building Challenge, right?
I think the Cascadia Building Challenge, I believe, is the only one that we that only provides certification after a year of performance.
Exactly, right.
Tracked and
there are very few of those buildings around. I think that the
Omega Institute.
Yes, the Omega Institute Sustainable Living Center.
I think I just saw the press that they just passed a year and got their certification. Is that right?
Sounds about right. We spoke with Skip Backus, the CEO of Omega, about a year ago, and they'd been in operation for a few months. So that sounds about right. Yeah. Well, good for them. Good on them.
I'm not 110% sure that I'm getting my facts correct.
Sounds about right, though. I know that they do have monitoring on that building. So,
yeah, I think it's hard to argue that it's hard to argue against that.
But you change the subject a little bit about, you know, lead AP, accredited professional. I mean, you could be a high school dropout, take the test, and be a so-called professional.
I have no idea. maybe so.
But, you know, I mean, you must have done it because you felt it was necessary.
Well, I did it because it just seemed like a good idea. You know, it's a credential like any other.
No, it's not a credential like any other. It's not a credential. There's no third party oversight over the USGBC and whatever they decide to do.
What it is, you demonstrate that you have an understanding of the LEED rating system. That is what it is. And it has become synonymous, as I think you're probably trying to point out, with green design, quote unquote, sustainable design. And I think the LEED rating itself. And the LEED rating is not a building, it's a rating, and the LEED AP credential is a credential which is not it's a credential of your understanding of sustainability in buildings to the extent that LEED is a sustainable building.
You've shown that you understand how to administer a checklist.
Well, you know the LEED rating.
Right.
That's the LEED credential.
How's that any different from when I was a Boy Scout and I got merit badges that showed that? No, wait. A merit badge actually had something to do with something real. No. The ranks showed that I became first class when I could demonstrate that I could cook for five of my friends on a camping trip. To call it a credential, I truly have to disagree that it's a credential. It's a club membership. It's like being a turtle. You know, if someone asks you if you're a turtle, The answer is, you bet your sweet ass I am.
Well, you are a turtle that knows what the all the different categories and requirements of the
checklist
rating system are. Yeah,
exactly. All right. Well,
I think it wasn't something that I just signed up for. It was definitely things that it took some time. I'm not gonna hang my hat on my lead AP, but
you should hang your hat on your being a registered architect.
I am having
a degree in architecture from an accredited school.
I am surprisingly very proud of that RA. Yes, and I mentioned to you earlier the passive house training that I did this summer. That's another credential that it's a much more narrowly focused and abbreviated training than that RA represents. But the passive house training is very substantial stuff.
Did you go
out of that also?
Were you able to go hear the German doctor who invented passive house at Cooper Union?
I didn't. There was an event the night before that I was able to go to, and so that was really nice. I didn't get to go see him at Cooper Union.
I was going to, but I was on charrette. Isn't it nice to have a project?
You know, he's a physicist. And
yeah.
So his...
For those of us who are civilians, what's his name again?
Wolfgang Feist.
Uh-huh.
And he is one of the creators of the... or initiators of the passive house building standard.
Uh-huh.
Shall I explain, or do you want to explain? Or do you want to skip it entirely?
No, I do want to hear about it. I was hoping to get you to lose your religion as regards lead AP.
Lead AP. I don't actually have a huge amount of lead religion, but I do think that, and I'm sure you will no doubt disagree. I do actually think that in general a LEED building is better than a not LEED building, especially when you're talking about some of the higher levels of LEED rating.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that Henry's criticisms are probably I'm definitely not qualified to support or deny his critique or the USGBC's methodology. I do think it does sound to me like his criticisms are productive ones. And, whether or not he should have
sued over it,
created a class action lawsuit, yeah, is entirely another.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. You stay on the line. Let's take the next musical break, and we'll come back and talk about Passive House.
Okay.
Down.
Burning down the house. What, you're not losing your religion, Ryan?
I'm not an especially religious guy, Curtis.
Okay, fair enough. Tell us about Passive House and Dr. Feist and what he has created.
Well, there was in the 70s, 60s in this country, after the oil crisis, as you no doubt know, recall, a flourishing of, you know, interest in energy efficiency and sustainability, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I read the Whole Earth catalog avidly every, you know, quarter however long it came out. I loved that stuff.
Yes. That era produced, you know, a couple of different strains of approaches towards making energy-efficient buildings. And one was the passive solar house that, you know, we all have some familiarity with.
Right.
And which took root, you know, where I went to school at the University of Oregon. You know, you're using the sun to collect energy and heat the house. The other model was the super insulated house where you just make a very, highly insulated house, and both of those strains died out in the 80s, and
well, in part because the super tight houses then had problems with volatile organic compounds that we hadn't really thought about before.
Is that true? Back in the 70s, super insulated.
Which led to some jurisdictions banning the use of urea formaldehyde in insulation because the outgassing of the urea was making people ill. And since there wasn't infiltration, there wasn't the traditional air change through infiltration, cracks around the windows and the doors, people were getting sick. And then also there were carpets that outgassed VOCs and all that horror, which is part of the, you know, the sustainable and better quality of life aspects of the LEED system. You get points for using materials that don't have these VOCs, right?
Well, you do. And in fact, I think correctly so, because as a house becomes more airtight, it becomes more energy efficient. As it becomes more energy efficient, well, as it becomes more airtight, it also makes it so that some of the sloppy practices we've had and some of the chemicals that we've gotten used to using in our built environments become more problematic.
Right.
And so you do have to take more care with proper ventilation of a building.
Right. Right. So back to Passive House.
So what happened was this all got kind of shelved for a while in the 80s, and Dr. Feist picked it back up again in Germany. He found out about some stuff that was going on in China and was interested in adapting it to Europe, and did some test case projects through a university that he was a faculty member at, and they built some buildings using this super insulated house idea. He got input from Amory Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute here, and they made it work. And it became the genesis of this idea, which is a highly efficient building envelope. And what happens is that if you make the building envelope more and more efficient and a better container for the energy that's inside of it, it becomes more expensive, right? And there's kind of a cost-benefit curve, right? More money, more efficient. More money, more efficient. More money, up, 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 up. And then at some point, you make it efficient enough that the heating and cooling system for the house drops out.
And altogether?
Altogether. And you can heat the house using... Now, this was the core idea that they landed on, and it's since evolved past this. But the beginning of this for them was this break in the graph where the heating system drops out, and bear in mind this is, you know, Germany where you don't really have air conditioning in the summertime, so they're really
not usually looking, correct.
These were houses that they were not putting air conditioners into, so their only concern was with the heating system. Heating system drops out because the house is so tight. You do need to have controlled mechanical ventilation with a heat recovery ventilator, and you can add it, which is a very small airflow compared to what you might have out of your furnace. And they were able to provide the heat that the supplementary heat that the house needed beyond what was created by the building's inhabitants and the things that we all use, our computers, etc., via very small supplementary heat that could go into the airflow of this very small ventilation air requirement.
Uh-huh.
So the savings from no heating system in the house offsets the cost that you put into the building envelope and makes it a viable, economically viable model.
Mm-hmm.
And they have also since determined, they're in the process of learning that it also looks like the energy inputs that are still required by these houses are of the order of magnitude that could actually be provided but from renewable energy sources globally. So I think if I
globally but not necessarily on site.
I don't know about that difference. I don't know. Presumably on site, maybe not. I don't know to what extent they've analyzed that.
What I meant was, you know, a small solar array or something like that, PVs.
Well, yes, photovoltaics. I think they're looking at this from the large picture. But,
I see.
I'm not able to tell you definitively from which perspective they're making that statement.
I mean, this is interesting, but what bothers me about a lot of this modern construction is that it relies on electricity to move air when
if you can open a window or open a portal somehow.
Do you keep your windows open in the middle of winter, Curtis?
No, but I do keep them cracked.
Well, why?
Because I don't have a mechanized air intake system in my house.
What if you could have that same nice fresh air and not be throwing the heat out the window, be able to recover the heat?
Well, that would be a great idea.
But Ryan,
it would be great if the air flowed through natural convective currents rather than having a fan that has to run. I worry about when the grid goes down, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when the grid goes down, you can crack your windows open again. How about that?
But in some of these buildings, you can't open the windows.
Of course you can open the windows.
Well,
why would you not be allowed to? I mean, if you build a house, of course you can open the windows.
Well, the building code kind of requires that you have windows that you can open.
Well, and, I mean, building code aside, this is, I think, a misconception about passive houses, is that they're like living in sort of hermetically sealed bubbles. And
you mean like an Airstream trailer?
I've actually never been in an Airstream trailer, but they have operable windows and doors just like every other house. What they have are really, really high quality operable windows and doors. And in fact, you would probably die for these windows. They are really spectacular and beautiful.
Triple glazed,
multi-point hardware, dual layers of weather stripping. They have they'll have cork, so they'll be fully thermally broken. Wood windows oftentimes.
Wow.
They're expensive, and that's where that cost-benefit curve comes into play, because the goal is to offset the cost of those windows by saving on mechanical equipment.
Well, yeah, it's true. When you add it all up, all the sum of parts, everything does count. Let's just take 2 minutes of Depeche Mode. Down the house. I understand we have another caller.
Hey, Curtis.
Matthew Arnold.
Disabled Matt Arnold. How are you doing?
All right. We're very good. Have you been listening to the show?
Yes.
Now, I know that you had a few choice things to say about the USGBC, so let her rip.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things I wanted to put on the table for you. I support Henry Stoot because of the benefits of discovery. I don't think UBC is going to tell the truth on their own, and they need a little encouragement. It really offends me when fraudulent statistics are promulgated because people make bad decisions on account of it. I've never bought into the idea of lead. The lead point system implies an equivalency among points, and the things that get points are arbitrarily chosen by people in a black and a dark room. We don't know why, and they're certainly functionally different by orders of magnitude, and things that don't get points, maybe in my judgment or yours, maybe should get a point, but really a point system is something for children. It's not for people who have bring a sophisticated design sensibility. The second thing I really want to say, Curtis, is that sustainable by definition, cannot include subsidy. If I'm selling hamburgers in styrofoam containers, and the hamburger costs $1 and the container costs $3 to properly dispose of, that's not a sustainable situation. So I'm being subsidized by the fact that I don't have to pay for the trash, taking care of the trash. In the same way, any government subsidy for a project that's LEED certified, it's not sustainable. And all LEED projects are either indirectly or directly or both subsidized.
How so subsidized?
Well, they get tax credits, they get grants from the government, they're all paid for by the government, which means these systems and all the money in USGBC's bank account actually has come from the taxpayer. And no congressman ever voted on that tax, and it hasn't been subjected to the normal scrutiny that we expect in a democratic society. So I'd like to see the subsidies go away, and if LEED survives that, more power to it. If it doesn't survive it, why are we kidding ourselves with it? So, I know you don't have a lot of time. Henry's suit can benefit the more people who are willing to put their name on the bottom of the piece of paper. And I think if anybody is inclined, please, you can search the net and find the attorneys. They'd love to hear from you. And if you're not comfortable joining a class action suit for personal profit, if you've been affected by this, consider maybe naming your alma mater as the beneficiary. And then this would be a great way to get some real truth in the arena that we can all discuss and figure out what the right thing to do is.
I mean, should there be a settlement? Right.
At this point in the game, this system of LEED is doing more damage to the long-term redirection of our design efforts towards more sustainable design. It's doing more damage than it's doing credit to it, and it needs to be corrected. Unfortunately, the system that we have to correct it involves the courts, and so we're going to have to go for it. But I sure do hope folks will consider it, and that's what I've got to say.
Well, I know you feel very passionately about this.
I feel passionately about everything, man.
But because I'm the host, I have to kind of walk the middle ground here. Is Ryan still on, or did we lose him?
No, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Why? I'm afraid to know why you're bringing me back in at this point.
I guess you're not joining the class action.
Well, I'm gonna leave that one for
Matt to do.
Brighter, better people than me to decide.
All right. This has been fun. I mean, we could go on for a couple more hours here, but...
Ryan would agree that we're all going to benefit when the facts come out and they're played on the table in black and white for everyone to read. I'm sure you would.
Ryan?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
I think what Matt was trying to say is that wouldn't you like to have the real information that they've been suppressing? If they've been suppressing,
well, and I've been trying to say that as we've had this discussion. I think the data. There's no argument that you can make against asking for the data. That is probably very compelling. Yeah, I think it would be great. Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. We can only hope that they don't go for a private settlement that's not in the public record. That would be.
I'm sure Henry's not interested in the money.
Oh no, Henry's done all right for himself.
Record, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for calling in, Matt. Thank you for being with us as our primary guest, Ryan.
Sure, my pleasure, as always.
Give yourself a plug. Do you have a website presently?
Me?
Yeah,
I do. In fact, but it's having some technical difficulties, so you can't get to it.
Well, why don't you give us the URL and we'll ping it until it works.
It's just ryanenchity.com.
Can you spell that for us?
Sure. RyanEnschede.
Cool. And
Matt, pain in the butt, huh? Who would have, in their right mind, chosen that
Hey, once you get your once you get your mouth around it, it works. Once you get your brain into it, it works for me. So Ryan Entschede's been our guest. Matt Arnold has called in. Thank you, Matt. What's your URL?
I don't have anyone right now. StairwayToArchitecture.com.
Stairway.
You'll have to look it up in the Wayback Machine.
Okay, StairwayToArchitecture.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. We've been brought to you by Acme Fish for over 50 years, the premier provider of smoked North Atlantic seafood. Learn more about Acme Smoked Fish at acmesmokedfish.com. This has been Burning Down the House, 10th November 2010. Heritage Radio Network rocks. Thanks for listening.